It's close.
We're going to open the Senate Education Committee. Today is April 18th, 2017. And for those of you who do not know, this is the last meeting of the first half of the session. So those that don't move forward from here are not moving forward. So with that, and since we have some people who are chomping at the bit to get up to testify, and we never hold them if we can, we are going to open a public hearing and work session for Senate Bill 1034. So we'll have a short explanation of the bill. Thank you.
Chair Rowland, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1034 creates a subtraction from federal taxable income for an amount equal to the principal and interest payments made by a taxpayer during the tax year on qualifying education loans under certain circumstances.
$5 million.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have a revenue on this bill? Just checking to see how much its value is. Just a little one. Okay.
Light, I think. Okay.
So this bill does have a subsequent referral to another committee.
Okay.
Okay. So with that, go ahead and start.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Lithcom, and committee. This idea was brought to me this session by Jonathan Lockwood. It's something that I don't think has been attempted anywhere in the country. When we did a press release on this idea, this concept, it was picked up by over 30 broadcast papers. Miami Herald did a report on it, I think. I'm not sure if it was LA Times or some. But the idea has been talked about all over the country. I think it's a fairly new concept. It's a tax deduction for paying off your student loans. But as I say it, it's a tax deduction on steroids. The idea with this is like in the last 15.
I'd like to point out that we're kind of opposed to steroids.
Yes.
But
and you should also.
Is this the Health and Human Service Committee?
Yeah, since you're trying to take credit for this, you need to mention who you are.
I never remember to do that.
Yeah, you should.
I know. You didn't write. Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26. I never remember that.
But halfway in your testimony, you didn't know.
I know. I shouldn't do that. It is. So I sit on the Education Subcommittee, and I've watched the last couple of years how we've really underfunded higher education. Back when I went to school, I think this back then it was most of us that had a job in the summer. I don't know if Senator Courtney did, but you could probably pay for your education to a public school if you had a decent paying job in the summer. If you got out of school and worked for 3 months, you could get a long way towards paying your education. I know that's not true these days. I know in the last 15 years or so, I think the state used to pay at least 50%, and the student would pay the other 50. And now, if you look at the if you look at it, tuition is about 70% of higher education. States covering about 30%. So, what does that mean? That means the middle and upper income students are graduating with an insurmount of student debt when they get out of college. I think the average from the HEC facts and figures, I've seen that the average debt is about $28,000 per graduating student from a four-year public or private university. I know what it's like. A couple of times in my business career, we've had to borrow money to operate, do those kind of things, and I know when I have a debt hanging over my head, that's all I kind of think about. It's a sad thing that we're graduating a generation of folks that are going to spend their 30s and 40s paying off student debts and not being able to buy a car, buy a house. Their biggest thing is having to pay off their student debt. And so I believe and what this bill will do, it's a tax deduction. So let's say a student owes $50,000 in debt, and they make $50,000 a year, and they pay $10,000 towards that debt, their state income tax liability will be $40,000 for that. And what this bill does, there's a lot of bills out there that are like that. What this does is enables their mother, their father, their grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles to help pay off that loan. They would, those people would get that deduction. It also allows their business, who they're working for, or their business to pay that loan off and get that same tax tax reduction. So I know it's going to be a big hit to the budget. I don't know the exact figures. I think Member Senator Rowland, you've seen those, but I think we owe it to this group of students that we've put on their backs, because we have underfunded higher education for the last 15 years, and this is the outcome, and we got to do whatever we can to help them. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Courtney, it's great to see you again.
Thank you, Chair Boland, Vice Chair Lithicum, and Senator Gelson, Senator Hess, Senator Cruz. My name is Peter Courtney. I'm State Senator from District 11, which is here in Salem, and I'm really, once I realized I was coming here again, I got nervous, because I came to this committee before on an idea which would have dramatically reduced student debt in the committee. They didn't embrace it. So this is a second attempt to try to get some help, and I realize this is not my bill. The good senator to my left asked me to join him on this piece of legislation. And I did, and I didn't, for some reason, this has been given to me by my staff. I find it remarkable because of the individual schools. You'd say there's around 28,000. My figures show it's about 27,000 in Oregon. The Oregon average student debt is 27,000. And if you break it down by school, Southern Oregon is like 24,000 plus. OSU is 26,000. U of O is 25. This one really hurts me. Western Oregon is 27 plus. That's really, because I spent 30 years there. So that really made me wince. Willamette stunned me. Willamette's 26. So I've always felt that they would be out of sight because it's private and it's very expensive. But their average debt is 26. Now I realize we get into all the other things, Your Honor. But we did put Willamette in here to make it a more credible statement about coverage. And then PSU is 32. It's a whopping amount. I don't know what's going on at PSU. Now, don't go running out of here and say I said bad thing about PSU. But if these figures are right, PSU's average debt is huge compared to, I mean, it's all bad, but just shows you the breakout of these schools in terms of students coming out of them and their debt according to 2015 figures that we've got. Also, the student loan debt of Oregon graduates has gone up 60% through 2004. I feel awkward coming here and telling you this because I'm sitting before the great Marcus Haas, who, of course, pioneered a major tuition program by community colleges. But some of these figures, you can never repeat them enough. You need to constantly be reminded because real people are involved with these figures, and it really affects them. As you know, our higher education spending is 47th in the nation, and we can get blasted for that. And I'm not going to get into whatever, it is what it is, but we're just not able to do some of the things we used to do for our higher education, for that matter, community colleges. And that's another whole discussion which I could have with you going back to the early 1990s when a certain ballot measure was passed. And I want to, again, I'm not mean to bore you, but the situation with our young people and or non-traditional students is real. I understand that the nation's largest student loan provider is being sued for systematically misleading borrowers, and universities are building multi-million dollar facilities while increasing tuition by double digits. And that's another thing I was asked to espouse on when I was here earlier about my feeling about this continuing capital construction going on in higher education. Makes no sense for me. It is not sustainable, but we do it. We have, I think I was told last week, Southern's going to go up above, U of O is over 12%. I think that's what they said. I think Southern's going to go up to 13 or 14%. OSU's only going to do 4%. I'm not quite figuring out how they did that, but their president came in front of me 2 days ago, and they still got a $20 million debt. But these are some of the tuition increases that are taking place with these schools that we speak. And We've bogged down an entire generation, it seems to me. And I have a millennial who works in my office who constantly reminds me I'm no millennial in no uncertain terms. It's a very painful thing to be told by a millennial, you're no millennial. I mean, because they then describe why I'm not a millennial. It's not something you want to hear about yourself, your personality, the way you dress, your attitudes, even the way you speak. But it, all kidding aside, we gave them a 27,000 debt and wonder aloud why they never buy a house and why many never even start a family. You're not starting families. And I'm just saying, in effect, they come out of high college with two things. They're basically, they got a degree, hopefully, and they got debt, and that's about it. So anything I can do, and that's why I joined my good brethren here, to try to help, I will. Now, I'm not going to tell you, it's his bill. Because if Senator Hass is on his game, and he may not be, he could come at me and say, I don't like your bill, because he doesn't like a lot of my tax credit bills. I got one on animals, too. But he could say, given the fact we have no money, he could say, but he probably won't say to me, how would you fit this into today, this budget we're going into, assuming, and do you know how much this would cost us? If he was on his game, he would ask me those questions. I may or may not answer them if he asked me, because I have to get permission from the individual who asked me to help him introduce this bill. So I think this is another attempt to try to deal with this monster that I've outlined for you, institution by institution. And by the way, I noticed there's a Willamette graduate up here with you. There is a Bearcat with you, and he's just euphoric that the kids coming out of his school are 26,000, like big, you know, he feels good because actually it's less debt at Willamette than there is in some of the other schools. So tough time to bring this forward, but you got to keep at this student debt thing. I don't know if we'll ever get it under control. I simply don't know if we'll ever get this monster out of control. But I'll tell you, I got grandchildren now, putting away a little money for all of them, but I just, you know, I probably won't be around when they start, because I'm pretty old when they start, but I tell you, man, I don't know. I just, they got a college in their future, if they want to go there, I just don't know. So I'm happy to join Senator Thompson on this idea and go up the hill with him on it. Thank you for letting me come here and testify.
Any questions for Senator Hass?
Thank you. I thank you. I'm not going to get into
there's the impact. They don't give anything.
Yes, I know. But I think I know what the impact is. But that we understand the budget realities, and we understand the realities facing students who sometimes have to make a difficult choice of, do I go into debt? Do I maybe skip going to college and try something else? And that's just a choice we shouldn't be putting on Oregon families. So maybe there is something we can still do in the Finance Committee. Probably it's changing some of these things here. Senator Thompson, you might just answer one question. There's a phrase, there's a line in here that the employee would get, an employer may get the benefit here. Is that what your intent was?
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Lithgow, Senator Hass, my intent was to make it as easy as for anybody to pay off somebody's student loan. So if a business paid off somebody's student loan, like your employer decides to give you a little Christmas bonus and pay it towards that person's student loan, that business would get the tax deduction on that part that they contributed.
All right. Well, so that's what this is. Not the relatives. The relatives are not
in here. No. Senator Hass.
But it is if you're...
It's anybody in their family, anybody that pays off that person's student loan should get that deduction.
But that's not in here is what I'm saying.
No, well, we did that with a dash, with an amendment. And I don't... Yeah.
Any other questions?
If I could, and just a comment, and I truly appreciate this, but I would also point out that at some point in time, we need to get our hands around, why the cost of higher ed so far outstrips inflation and has for decades. And there's got to be a reason behind that, and the system itself needs to be accountable for some of this as well.
And Senator Roblin, just one more last follow-up, Senator Roblin, Vice Chair. One more comment. Senator Roblin and I heard in our education sub this morning, a dentist student at OHSU And when he gets out of, gets done with college, he's going to have a student debt of $350,000. So a lot of this is relative. I know that happens to a lot of doctors and physicians and nurses. Mm-hmm. It's just the $27,000, $28,000 average. You know, there's students with some really high debt numbers. Thank you.
Yes, Senator.
Yes, that's correct. I do want to point out that all of us, though, have participated, including you, Senator, we pay for the tuition for the MD students, the dental students, the physician assistants and nurses, PA students at our health science university if they agree to go into an underserved area for 5 years or more. So if you say which fascinates me, because here we are doing this extraordinary thing. And by the way, that's critical. We need those skills out there. So we pay for their tuition. I hope you know that, because mm-hmm. that's part of it. It was $5 million. I don't know how much it is now, the roll-up. We started that program either two sessions ago or something like that. We do that so that you at least – I realize there's other costs, but that's substantial, so you can at least take some pride in that. Well, wait a minute. You were voting against everything, so maybe you didn't. But the fact is, I'm very proud of that program to try to help get the medical communities – and healthcare people out into the underserved areas of the state of Oregon, and we'll pay their tuition, providing they agree to go there for a certain number of years.
Yeah.
And I also want to say, we have nobody to blame but ourselves for the accountability of higher ed. We cut them loose. We cut them loose. Don't get me started. We cut them loose. And independent boards, I can go on and on. So we cut higher ed loose. In some ways, by doing that, in the area of accountability and things, we don't have as much sway or authority over them as we should. And, yes, you're absolutely right. You have no idea of the budgets in some of the higher education institutions. You have to go to the TRUs, the small universities that are much better at handling their money because they don't get a lot. They don't have much of an alumni base. They have no endowments, and so they're literally living from hand to mouth. You get into the big boys and girls, that's a different story. And I'll probably make – if that gets outside this room, I'll get in trouble. But to some extent, the legislature cut them loose. And in doing that, we have lost some of our ability to control their budget and oversee some of their activity. And I'm just going to say it. I ended up eventually voting for it because I rose above principle. But I hate myself for it, but I have to say that for the record.
Senator Hess.
Thank you. We did cut them loose except for two areas, health care and retirement, which they vastly wanted, that they thought they could do a better job for their employees.
Yeah.
We were unable to muster the political support to change those things in their university system, and that's responsible for a lot of the expense that is driving up tuition today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator. One thing I like about the exchange taking place is we're really saying how we did things that we perhaps shouldn't have done. So it's a full confession going on here. I don't know of any other place in this building that's going on. That's just kind of confession to our sins, and our sins right after Holy Week. We're supposed to do it during Holy Week. To do it after Easter makes no sense at all. So that's what I just want to say.
It was a scheduling issue.
So any other questions? And I have one question. We don't have any amendments.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you have those, if this bill were to move to the revenue,
all right,
then you might want to propose those because we haven't seen them.
Okay.
So, okay.
I have some amendments, but I can't offer them because he's my father and I'm the son.
Okay.
But I have this whole list of amendments, but I don't dare bring them up because he'll never speak to me again. So anyway.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
So, Jonathan Lockwood. We might as well have you come up, and since we have one other than that, unless there's somebody else out there that wants to speak. Okay. Thank you, Jonathan.
Okay. Chairman Rublin and members of the committee.
One second.
Oh.
Senator Quinnop, do you want to speak to this bill? Or?
Sure, I can go after Jonathan, though.
You can come on up and sit with him.
Okay.
If you would like. Sorry that I didn't call you first. Okay. Okay, Jonathan. Now you go.
Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the time and consideration to hear this bill, known as the Millennials Relief Act, which will make student debt payments completely tax-free. This bill presents did the same thing as bad role model with Senator Thompson. My name is Jonathan Lockwood, and I'm a millennial. So this bill presents a monumental opportunity for Oregon to lead the nation on this critical issue of student debt reform. The Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission issued a report last month that clearly painted a picture of how bleak are the opportunities and affordability of education for young people. In the 2013-2014 school year, over 3,000 students at Oregon's public institutions received federal student loans. They received a total of over $22.5 million. The Institute for College Access and Success reports that the average student debt in Oregon increased 51% from 2004 to 2014. And according to the Oregonian, Portland State University trustees approved to tack on nearly 700 to 9,030 to an undergraduate's annual costs. And just last month, the University of Oregon passed a 10.6% tuition increase for the fall term. And that's not all. The Oregonian reported that Southern Oregon University is toying with a double-digit jump on student costs. Students in Oregon are spending over $500 a month on $500 a semester on books alone. It should then be no wonder 63% of students in Oregon have student loans, and the average student debt load is almost $30,000. And people need to put all of this in perspective, because it would take an everyday millennial 48 weeks of working 40 hours a week, which is about almost an entire year of working day in and day out, to afford to attend college. And food insecurity and housing insecurity are plaguing millennials in college too. And when I found this out, my stomach dropped. 47% of college students in Oregon do not regularly eat, and not by choice, but due to a lack of financial stability. Is this what we've come to, where young people have to mortgage their entire future to barely scrape by? It's a miscarriage of the promises made to young people, and it should outrage every Oregonian. Governor Kate Brown acknowledged this and expressed her concern recently for the hurdles in front of our future leaders. Hillary Clinton said we must liberate the millions of Americans who already have student debt in student loan proposals. Bernie Sanders said he wanted to put an end to the government making a profit off student loans. And Donald Trump outlined a federal plan and said students should not be asked to pay more on their student debt than they can afford, and the debt should not be an albatross around their necks for the rest of their lives. So we see members of both parties, polar opposites in some cases, recognize this pivotal burden looming over millennials and other generations too. How is it that everyone from Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump agrees on this issue, but virtually nothing has been done? One would assume we must hold our breath and wait for these national politicians to manifest any sort of impactful change. But that's not the case. Here in Oregon, we have a tremendous opportunity to bring everyone to the table to solve this issue. Republican Senator Chuck Thompson of Hood River and Democratic Senate President Peter Courtney have a proposal that would fundamentally transform the way millennials are treated by government and put an end to this intergenerational warfare. This bipartisan proposal protects taxpayers. No one will be forced to pay for anyone else's student loans or college tuition. This isn't a transfer. The proposal also protects higher education. Higher education will not see a dime displaced. It also empowers and incentivizes millennials to pay off their student debt at a faster pace, and this proposal incentivizes family members to help chip in. Besides that, businesses will also be incentivized to voluntarily create better benefits packages that address student debt. I want to underscore that while the essence of this bill is to provide much-needed relief to millennials suffering under a burdensome tax code and a burdensome education system, this bill will help anyone of any age who holds student debt and is making student debt payments. On a personal note, I understand personally the hardship of student debt. I paid for a substantial portion of my undergraduate degree, and after a series of internships and graduating, to move on to working on congressional campaigns, politics, and public relations, I found myself in an increasingly competitive workforce and challenging economy. And while I accomplished much, I knew it was time to continue my education and enrich my professional experience. So when I accepted my offer at Georgetown University to earn my master's degree, I knew that it would come with a price tag of taking out more student debt. This bill will help people like me across the state who are working hard, achieving and continuing to better themselves without further distorting the education system. It is a fair, equitable way to enact change. With this proposal, we're revolutionizing the way student debt is tackled while aligning people from a diverse political spectrum to accomplish a collective goal. This bill is proof that both sides of the aisle can come together in times of need to craft thoughtful, meaningful, and sound policy. A yes vote on this bill is a vote for the future leaders of this state. So let's make sure Oregon continues its tradition of trailblazing by becoming a leader in student debt reform and passing the Millennials Relief Act.
Thank you. Senator.
Good job. Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Tim Canope from Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo and Sun River, and I think my role here today was to hold Senator Thompson's coat, but he I got here a little late. So they did a great job testifying, as did Jonathan. I will be brief. I think we owe it as the legislature to give millennials and those who have been burdened by this debt, which has been encouraged upon them by parents and teachers and obviously universities. And I know there are people sitting in this audience that have nearly $100,000 worth of student debt because they've been in my office and they've talked to me about it. And we've all heard from people who have, you know, those kind of record numbers, quarter million, half million dollars, you know, the doctors, the dentists, and those that are pursuing significant degrees, but they're also, you know, just general degrees. We're seeing debts of 100,000 plus for people who are wanting to go into social work and other things. And to me, it's just not right that we have encouraged the debt yet. Have not provided a way to help them pay that off. And so I would encourage you to move this Senate bill forward and continue this discussion, because I think we're ringing the bell that this isn't going to continue, because at some point there's a breaking point at which people are just not going to be able to afford this type of debt, and we are there. And so before we have disaster in higher ed and kids going to college with this kind of debt, I think it's incumbent upon the legislature to do what it can to address the issue. And, you know, Senator Thompson's bill, along with Senator Courtney, I think have come upon one idea that I think has merit and needs to be pursued. And I thank you very much for your time and attention.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you both. Our last person is Marcia Kelly.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. This is a good idea. As described by the senator, the bill doesn't read to include grandparents or anyone who helps somebody pay off their student debt. So I'm going to base my remarks on just sort of a little bit of research that I've done. There are 42.2 million people in the United States with student debt. Oregon has about 1.25% of the population, so that if you translate that down, there are probably 525,000 Oregonians with student debt. It's not just the millennials who have student debt, so it's not just the millennials for whom this bill would apply. According to Student Loan Hero, people pay approximately $200 a month if they're an older student, or around $300 a month if they're a fairly newly minted student per month. So that makes about $2,400 to $3,600 a year that would be deducted from the federal income before you pay your taxes. I wasn't a math major, but I'm going to try to explain some of the figures here. So it means that for every person for whom this bill applies, you're probably going to be taking in between $216 and $324 less. And when you take that $216 and multiply that by 525,000 who could most likely use this, it comes up to a really big number. It actually comes up to a number that might be about 5% of what you're looking for in the $1.8 billion. My passion is making sure that we have revenue to provide the things that Oregonians really want. And my senator sat here and testified on this bill. Senator Courtney is my senator. And talked about not really addressing what happened in 1990. And that was the passage of Ballot Measure 5. And until the legislature comes to grips with the change in funding for schools, we are going to continually be in the same place we are. Programs that I care about that will help families get on their feet are facing $38 million in cuts in the latest proposed budget. So my urge to you is not just feel good, but make sure that you look at what the numbers will be, how much less revenue we will have for other things, including higher education, as you look at this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1034. We had already opened a work session at the same time, so I will take a motion if you would like to pass this bill.
Chair Roblin, I will move Senate Bill 1034 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and a referral to the Senate Finance and Review Committee by prior reference.
Senator Withicom moves.
Oh, yeah.
Senate Bill.
We know what you mean.
1034 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Senator Roblin, I think we should move it to the Finance Committee where we can look at these revenue issues in context of the other revenue issues. Obviously, the bill as written needs heavy amending to bring in the constructs of what we have allowable to do, but this is an issue that's close to my heart, and so maybe there is something we can do there. But I just want to echo Senator Cruz's comments as well, as there's two sides to this equation. It's not just throwing more money at trying to lower the debt and student loan and the cost of education, but there are some cost drivers in our higher education system that I think we really need to get a handle on as well.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I do want to say that from testimony, it's clear that the number of people who could be affected by this bill directly is very large, and therefore it probably doesn't allow us to necessarily make a conflict of interest declaration. But since I have a daughter that has a lot of debt in that very large number that people talk about, in the close to 100,000 times, I just wanted to make sure that people knew that this one could affect me in it directly. So I'm putting it on the record. Any other conversations? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to associate myself with the comments made by Senator Haas. I have discomfort with the way that the bill is written, but certainly don't want to shut down a conversation.
Okay, so the motion's on the floor. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition to sending this bill to the Revenue Committee? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. Now we have a bunch of work sessions. So we're going to start with Senate Bill 20. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 20. And with that, we'll have a short explanation of what this bill is from our administrator, and that we have the right paperwork.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 20 removes references to the Federal No Child Left Behind Act of 2001 and replaces them with references to the Every Student Succeeds Act of 2015. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. The -5 amendment makes modified diploma equivalent to high school diploma in all sections of state law.
Any discussion? Well, first we'll take a motion.
Senate
Bill 20.
Yeah, do you want amendments?
Yes.
Okay. Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -5 amendment dated 4/14 of 2017 to Senate Bill 20.
Senator Lipkin moves to adopt the -5 amendments dated 4/14/17 to Senate Bill 20. Is there any discussion? And we should probably have an explanation of the amendment.
I did.
Okay, it was part of it. Yes. Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had asked if it would be okay if Cindy came up to put something on
sure.
the record. But, a small element of this is that in 2007, Oregon became the first state in the country to have statewide standards for a modified diploma. And then a few years ago, the federal rules changed, and they were no longer, the federal government was not allowing students that received a modified diploma to receive financial aid benefits. So some of us went to Washington, D.C., met with the U.S. Department of Education. They agreed that it was equivalent. But now the new ESSA law says that if it is equivalent, you can no longer receive your transition services if you're an 18 to 21-year-old with intellectual and developmental disabilities, which is about 24 students a year. And so Cindy was going to come up and describe how we can do this and still make sure that kids get their transition services and that they still receive a rigorous high school education with access to all courses in the general curriculum, like history and science. And
thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Hunt, the Government Legal Affairs Manager at the Oregon Department of Education. It's so good to be back here with this bill. So as Senator Gelser was explaining, relating to the amendments on the modified diploma, under ESSA, the state can only have two types of diplomas now. And so we can have kind of the modified kind of regular diploma kind of category and an alternative category, which is our extended diploma. So in the bill, as Senator Gelser explained when we were exploring this, it would affect about 24 kids who are currently receiving transitional services but have received a modified diploma after they reach age 19. They're continuing to receive these services. So what we did in the bill is we said that if you qualify for a modified diploma, you can continue to receive your transitional services and other educational services. We also stated, because one of the reasons the kids would like to receive a modified diploma at age 18 or 19 is to graduate with their peers. Makes sense. And so we also said if you qualify to receive a modified diploma, you can graduate with your peers and participate in that very important ceremony for young children. And so that's how we addressed that issue specifically and still stayed within the ESSA language and kind of organized it.
Thank you. Any questions? I know that there are many of us who miss you from this building but appreciate you in the Department of Ed for helping clarify some of this kind of stuff and make sure things don't drop through the. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's right. You were the you drafted the modified diploma legislation.
Guilty as charged.
You also introduced me to the concept of the bill graveyard, which is when everything becomes a task force.
Yeah, that's why we have so many task forces.
Exactly.
It's always good to bring the history back, especially yes. for our new people who don't really have the understanding that we have with
thanks
Cindy
a lot.
Hunt.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So thank you very much.
You're welcome. And then I'm also here to answer questions on the foster children section of the amendments as well. Okay. Yeah, so the second part of the amendment, the federal government in Oregon had the same goal, which was for stability in educational services for kids who are in foster care. But we treated it in the reverse way. And so what I mean by that is that in Oregon, if you are in foster care, your residency is with the parents or the foster parents where you're placed. So if you lived here with your biological parents and then you're placed in another district, your residency goes here. But if a court determines it's within your best interest to remain in school over here, the court can order that you're still a resident here. What ESSA did is they reversed that. And so under ESSA, it says that once you're placed in foster care, you stay in your school of origin. But a court can say, well, it's in your best interest to go to the school district over here. So we had to change our state law to match ESSA. So I believe it goes to the same goal. But like I said, in reverse, so it keeps us in compliance with the federal law. We also, as part of our work around this, worked closely with the stakeholders to address a couple of other issues relating to foster kids. So there was some ambiguity in the law about what happens to foster kids at age 18. And so we clarified that their residency continues where they've been going to school. Also, as part of this, ESSA directed the Department of Ed, the Department of Human Services, school districts, and others to work together collaboratively to ensure transportation for foster kids free of charge. And through our conversations with the Department of Human Services, we've arrived at a solution, which is that traditionally what happens is that the transportation of foster kids is paid for in a combination of by school districts and the Department of Human Services. And so what happens is that school districts can claim for 70% of the transportation costs, or 80 or 90, depending on where they're at on the scale, like with the state school fund. And so some school districts were not claiming this money because it was only at 70%. And what was happening is DHS caseworkers were then transporting the kids using federal dollars. And because it was coming through DHS, we couldn't leverage our state school fund dollars to draw down more federal funds. So, long story short, we're entering into an agreement with the Department of Human Services whereby they're sending up to $500,000 of federal funds to the Department of Ed. We will use that money to reimburse school districts for the cost of transportation of foster kids for that remaining 30% that's not reimbursed from the state school fund. The result of this then will free up additional monies, like I said, for DHS for services to foster kids. And that's why there's a fiscal on the bill.
Okay.
But the fiscal relates to federal funds. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns? I appreciate your ability to explain very complicated, weird things in a more reasonable way.
This one was a little complicated and weird, but it's ending up in a good place.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Any further questions? Seeing none. Okay. So on the we have the amendment up. So is there any other discussion about the amendment? If not, is there any opposition to the amendment? Seeing none. So moved. Senator Lipcomb.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 54 as amended.
20.
Oops, 20. As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be added.
So, Senator Lipcomb moves Senate Bill 20 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a request for that a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means be added. Is there any conversation or discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, it passes and it's on its way to the Senate President's Office for a reassignment. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 20, open a work session on Senate Bill 54. We'll have a short explanation of the bill.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, the Dash 1 amendment replaces the measure. It expands the scope of programs, duties, or functions for which the Higher Education Coordinating Commission can request appropriations. It modifies state law regarding the budget request process. It requires HEC to evaluate public universities every 2 years and submit a report to the legislature. It allows HEC to adopt necessary rules for administering the evaluations and requires university governing boards to meet at least 4 times each year. The bill makes certain technical changes, requires public universities to establish a system of shared administrative services for the maintenance of federal tax benefits relating to state bonds and performance of administrative services relating to employee benefits. It allows public universities to opt out of the system of shared administrative services under certain circumstances.
I'll take a motion on the amendment.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 4/11 of 2017.
Senator Lipcomb moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4/11/17, which took us a long time. If you recognize, this bill is 54, and it's been all the way here to get there, and it was a large amendment. Is there any conversation about the amendment? Any opposition to the amendment? So moved. Senator Lipcomb.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 54 as amended by the Dash 1 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any conversation about the motion? Is there any opposition to this motion? Seeing none, so ordered. And this one, nope, it has 54. It isn't going to the, this is a complicated long bill. Is there anybody who wants to carry this bill? If not, I will carry the bill. Okay, I got it. With that, we'll close this work session on Senate Bill 54. I want to make a statement about Senate Bill 209. We have a group of people who are okay with this bill. It has to do with a bill we passed a number of years ago that has to do with an online schools having the ability to hire the personnel, including the principal or the lead teacher of the school district, with permission from the local board. And there have been some concerns with regard to that, with respect to a number of changes of principals over the last year and a half or two that came up in some of the conversations. It's also has been mentioned by our group that this originally was done because of one teacher in particular, and that teacher is now retired. And I knew that person well, so I understand exactly where that came from. The current situation is that the previous bill does not expire right now. It has one more year before it has to be dealt with. And I would like to put some more investigation into that personally. So we are going to not work Senate Bill 209. It will go away. I commit to the group and the people that we will watch it very closely, have a conversation, and I expect that you will see a similar bill in the next session. But we want to have a conversation. So with that, we'll move on to Senate Bill 353. Again, in Senate Bill 353, we have a slight constitutional problem with respect to the number of votes necessary to pass it out of this committee. So we are going to pass over that bill at this point. I have some real concerns with regard to funding of Senate Bill, the ballot measure 98 that we had passed by the people before. It concerns me, and I'm looking at Senator Haas to find some money, because from my perspective, until we get a reasonable amount of money, and all of the people who testified for this bill, against this bill, said the same thing, that we need to fully fund education before we have a conversation about this bill. So I'm very concerned about that, but with the constitution problem that I exists, I am not going to move this bill today. 353. So,
Senator Roblin.
Yes.
Thank you. I am holding the business people who testified in to stand down on this bill and work on the revenue package that we have in the works, and I'm holding them to their word that they will do what they said they would do, is to work toward the end of fully funding education. And if that doesn't happen, I think we need to rethink how we're going to try to pay for that ballot measure. But for now, let's keep our fingers crossed and work for a package of cuts and revenue, working together with collaboration and consensus.
Okay. I do have opportunities with bills that are available, so I there are things that we can do, but I yes, and Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I stand with everybody here wanting to ensure that education is fully funded and paid for. I certainly am very enthusiastic about the types of goals and programs that were in Measure 98. As a school board member, I worked to establish those in our own district through levies and prioritization of our own funds, but I remain deeply concerned about our initiative system that can put such a request on our state budget at a time when we're looking at reductions. And while we're speaking in this committee about the impact on education, the amount that we will spend to implement Measure 98 is roughly equivalent to the amount that we are looking at needing to cut from the human services budget, which includes reducing the number of child welfare workers, reducing the number of child protective services workers. These are the same kids that are in our schools and are already missing about 40% of the workforce that is needed to keep them safe. And we've read in the papers about what is happening to them. And when we make these decisions, we continue to not invest in a system that keeps our school children safe when they're at home. So I, too, would hold the business community accountable to coming to the table for a revenue package and to ensure that the revenue package is looking at children and youth in all settings, including within the DHS budget. It's not just about education.
Thank you very much for those comments. And yes, Senator Cruz.
I'm not going to talk about revenue because there's other solutions, but my main concern, I fully understand the intent of this bill that we're not doing. Ballot measures are wonderful and a terrible way to do legislation, pure and simple, because they're relatively prescriptive in what they do with all the good intentions. I would like flexibility in the funding, and I'm also looking at Measure 99 and the funding in that bill, which is lottery dollars for outdoor ed, which is kind of the same sort of direction we're trying to go with a lot of this stuff. And You know, Ms. Chair, for me, I would prefer we send the money to the schools unencumbered and let them do the best job they can of utilizing the resources. And so I do have some issues with siloed funding and in this one particularly, you know, to to require filling all three buckets is probably heavy lift for a whole lot of schools. And so I'm hoping that at some point in time, before we're done here, we can look at ways to increase the flexibility for how that money is allocated.
Yeah, and I guess I'll say a final comment. From my perspective, in Ways and Means, which I have the pleasure of serving on, it is my belief that even though a lot of people voted for this, it is an unfunded mandate, and I would rather we did not fund it until we got the right funding for K-12 in general, kind of along the same things we're doing here. So if we can't find revenue or other kinds of stuff, for me, Ways and Means should be looking at this ballot measure as a great idea. I believe in every one of them. I worked very hard, and if you go to the schools that I was principal of, we had these programs because we knew what they do for people. We understand that. But along the same lines, unless we give our school districts the ability to do the things they need to. Anyway, so I think we've said enough about 353, but thank you. So now we're going to...
Chair, I would say one more thing. When we get later in the session, when we have some time, we may want to, in this committee, further explore this subject as well.
Yes, so. I have talked to people about maybe having a committee hearing on this bill that will... The House has a bill that's gone into Ways and Means, so we might want to have our own conversation. Thank you with that, too. So now we're going to go to Senate Bill 395. It has to do with foster care. When it went to Ways and Means, it came without recommendation. It came up that it has no cost. They are already doing these things in both the health, apparently, and in... All it is getting the two to talk to each other so that we can find out who the foster care children are, or so that HEC can, and so we can start to have a conversation about whether those foster care kids are graduating, what rates they're graduating, and so on. So what I would propose is that we suspend the rules, and that takes four of us, to reconsider the bill so that we can have a bigger conversation about gathering the data. For me, getting the information, and I agree that we don't really need to know who the kids are, we just need to know how the system is currently working, and this bill would give us that information. So if there is a motion to reconsider, first to suspend the rules so that we can reconsider.
Sure. Chair Roblin, I'll move to suspend the rules for reconsideration on final action of Senate Bill 395.
Okay, thank you. Senator Lithcom has moved that we suspend the rules for the reconsideration of final action on Senate Bill 395. Is there any discussion? Any opposition to suspending the rules? So moved. Senator Lithicum.
I move that we reconsider the vote by which 395 was sent without recommendation. I believe that was my recommendation to not recommend. So that's the motion to reconsider that vote on non-recommendation to Ways and Means.
So Senator Lithcom moves that we reconsider the vote by which 395 was sent without recommendation to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion, any opposition to that motion? Seeing none, so moved. So now we do have the new fiscal that says that it does not have a cost. So Senator Lithcom.
Chair Roblin, I would now like to move Senate Bill 395 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and request that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means actually be rescinded.
Thank you. So Senator Lithcom moves that Senate Bill 395 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the request of subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So moved, and I think we'll have Senator Dembro carry.
That would be appropriate.
Yeah. Thank you. Close the work session on Senate Bill 395. So let me look at this. I'm just going back and forth to my other meetings. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 759. And we'll have a short explanation of the bill.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 759 specifies that account balances in higher education savings accounts are not counted when determining an individual's eligibility for public benefits for determinations made on or after January 1st, 2018. It declares an emergency effective on passage. The Dash 1 amendment excludes financial aid at public institutions of higher education.
Yeah, we might as well. So I will take a motion on the amendment.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 4/14 of 2017.
Senator Lipkin moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 759. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any opposition to the amendment? No. This one, we have a little bit of choice, but we've decided that we're going to send it. So, Senator Lithicum.
Chair, I would move Senate Bill 759, as amended by the Dash 1s, to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request that a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be added.
It had an indeterminate amount, and we had a conversation, so that's why we're doing that. So, no, it goes to Ways and Means. Is there any, Senator Lithicum moves that Senate Bill 759 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a request for a referral to Joint Ways and Means be added. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. Thank you with that one. Next, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 759 and open a work session on Senate Bill 911. And we have a Dash 1 amendment for this one. So, Senator Lithicum.
You want to explain it?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Short explanation.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, Senate Bill 911 establishes the Indian Health Scholarship Program administered by the Higher Education Coordinating Commission beginning with the 2018-19 academic year. It establishes program requirements and appropriates an unspecified amount of money to HEC for the scholarship program. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. The Dash 1 amendment clarifies that qualifying degree programs are those programs offered at Oregon Health and Science University. Defines tribal service site as either a healthcare facility located on a federally recognized reservation in Oregon or a healthcare facility located in Oregon serving a patient population that is at least 50% members of a federally recognized Indian tribe. The amendment prioritizes applicants who are members of Oregon's 9 federally recognized Indian tribes and then Oregon residents who are members of other federally recognized tribes. The amendment removes the 10% penalty for scholarship recipients who do not fulfill the terms of their agreement, and it declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017.
So, if people remember, this is the bill where one of our chair people from one of the Grand Ronde tribe came and talked about how important this was, and I Senator Farrioli came and spoke. I really believe this is the right thing to do, and the OHSU has worked with us to do this, and it's a little bit like the rural health care bill we already have. So with that, Senator Lithicum, you want to move the amendment?
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 4/13/2017.
Senator Lithicum moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 911, dated 4/13/17. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. Senator Lithicum.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 911 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Lithicum moves Senate Bill 911 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a referral to the Joint Ways of Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any conversation or discussion about the bill? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Chair, I would just suggest when it comes out of Ways and Means that it be co-carried by two senators who happen to be on the commission.
Thank you for that. Okay. I think that would be great. Is there any further discussion? Any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Thank you. So the next one is Close Senate Bill 911. So now we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 996 called Brighter Futures. We'll have a short explanation, including the Dash 3 amendments.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Senate Bill 996 authorizes the state registrar of the Center for Health Statistics to send data file on children born in Oregon to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It establishes the Oregon Bright Futures Fund in the state treasury. It creates a cohort account within the Oregon Bright Futures Fund and directs DCBS to create a designated beneficiary account at participating financial institutions for each child. It specifies notification requirements to parents, authorizes DCBS to be the trustee of accounts, and authorizes DCBS to use monies for post-secondary education expenses and provide scholarship grants and incentives to designated beneficiaries. The bill allows linkage to private financial accounts, directs DCBS to establish rules around contributions, requires annual report to designated beneficiaries, and exempts funds from public funds depository requirements. The bill creates the Financial Institution Community Education Fund in the state treasury and limits contributions to participating financial institutions. It requires reports by DCBS to Legislative Assembly, appropriates funds out of the general fund beginning July 1, 2017, and creates an operative date of January 1, 2018, declares an emergency effective on passage. The Dash 3 amendment, replaces the measure, establishes the Oregon Bright Futures Fund in the state treasury for post-secondary education savings programs. It establishes the Financial Institution Community Education subaccount within the fund for contributions or donations from participating financial institutions. It authorizes the state registrar of the Center for Health Statistics to send data file on children born in Oregon to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It directs DCBS to open the designated beneficiary account at participating financial institutions for each child and to establish maximum amount in the account. It authorizes DCBS to use monies in the fund for post-secondary education expenses and provide scholarships, grants, and incentives to designated beneficiaries. It allows contributions by designated beneficiaries or by DCBS into the account. It allows donations or contributions into the fund, requires reports and notifications to designated beneficiaries, allows DCBS to terminate accounts for monies unlikely to be used. It allows for financial aggregation software and directs DCBS to adopt rules to design, implement, and administer the program. The bill requires reports by September 15, 2020 and April 1, 2021, creates an operative date of January 1, 2018, or when sufficient monies are available. It redefines financial institution and clarifies that the registrar of the Center for Health Statistics should send data to DCBS on or after the execution of an agreement, clarifies provisions related to the disclosure of confidential information, and declares an emergency effective on passage.
Sorry. So, with all of that, Senator Lithgow, do you wish to make a motion?
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated 4/13/2017.
Senator Lithgow moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated 4/13/17. Is there any discussion about the amendments? I guess what I would say is that having worked on this with a number of people for a while, when and if we as a committee send this to Ways and Means, which I anticipate we will do, there may be a move there to amend it to just do a pilot program with some local people that want to fund it. And I wanted just to make sure that people understood that's a possibility as we go forward, so that they don't get upset that Ways and Means is dealing with this thing. Because there are some industries that would like to help fund this program, and that we may be able to fund this without any state money. But right now we're hoping that there would be some money to have a conversation about in Ways and Means. So with that, is there any other conversation on the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing none, any opposition to the Dash 3 amendments? So moved. Senator Lithgow.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 996 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Lithgow moves Senate Bill 996 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any conversation or discussion about the bill? Senator Lithgow.
I think the idea is a fantastic idea to get kids and families thinking about saving for education. There are just items in this Bright Futures bill that are quite frankly untenable. One of the items in Section 3, Sub 7, if the department determines that money's in a designated beneficiary account are highly unlikely to be used, the department may terminate the designated beneficiary account and transfer the money to the Oregon Bright Futures Fund. I think if those monies are set up and designated for individual students and families to plan their future and utilize, it's no business of the department to come by and say, hey, it doesn't look like you're going to use that. Give it to us. So I can't vote along those lines.
Thank you very much. We'll have that conversation as it moves forward, because I understand what you're talking about, and I think we can do some of that kind of stuff in ways and means. Yes, Andrew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similar concerns. There's too much Big Brother in this for me, and it's basically the state being responsible for setting up savings accounts for people and actually having control of them. You know, that's what we're supposed to take care of ourselves, and, you know, to be able to contribute to something is one thing. I just don't like the command and control structure of this, quite simply. So I'm going to oppose it. Not that it's not a good idea, but the structure truly does bother me.
Okay. Any other discussion? We'll have a roll call vote.
Senator Gelser?
Aye.
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator, Vice Chair Lincoln?
No.
Chair
Rowland? Aye. So the motion passes, and it's on its way to Ways and Means. And we'll take those things into consideration when we have it in Ways and Means, so thank you very much. Okay. With that, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 996. And we're going to open... a work session on Senate Bill 1002. And we'll have a short explanation of the bill plus the amendment.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1002 requires school districts to allow the use of school facilities by public school students and private tutors under certain circumstances. It requires public and tribal libraries to adopt policies allowing the use of library facilities by students and private tutors under certain circumstances. The -3 amendment removes all requirements relating to libraries. It allows schools to charge a fee up to $50 per year and specifies that school policies must allow the use of school buildings both before and after school. It declares an emergency effective July 1st of 2017.
We heard this bill a few days ago, and I'll take a motion. Senator?
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -3 amendment dated 4-17 of 2017.
Senator Lipkin moves that we adopt the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 1002, dated 4-17-17. Is there any discussion about the amendment?
Mr. Chair, this just removes the libraries.
Yes.
It does one other thing.
It
combines the amendments.
Yes.
That was like a pop quiz.
Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate this amendment as well. I have libraries that are having trouble even staying open.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So you know, putting an extra burden on them would not be appropriate at this point in time.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion about the amendment? Seeing none, so moved. Senator Lithicum.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 1002 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
That's the first time I've heard double odd in a committee, I think. So.
Yeah, I think that might be true. Senator Lithgow moves Senate Bill 1002 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Senator Gelser, would you care to carry?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to close our work session on Senate Bill 1002. We're going to make a comment on Senate Bill 1038. I've had some conversations with some people, including one of the makers of this bill. I am going to commit to having a conversation to see if we can work out something in the interim for another bill to come up, because I think there are some parts of this bill that I like. At the same time, I don't think we're ready, so it came late, so we're going to... Oh, that's right, don't have to gavel. We're not going to deal with Senate Bill 1038. Senate Bill...
If I could also comment on that.
Please.
At the same time, it speaks to core part of the education system, civics, and that I think we need to be repurposing and refocusing on. So I would agree with you that it's a subject we need to have more discussion on.
And I want to thank Senator Gelser, because I think her comments about graduation for some of our kids and having a single test and other things is an issue that we have to have a conversation about. So thank you. So with that, we will move on to Senate Bill 1047, which I have to say. Pardon?
Oh, Senator
Dembrough's here. Oh, Senator Dembrough, we passed a bill on to you. We're talking about Senate Bill 1047 right now. As I have gone around to my committee members,
staff.
I have come up. Staff, okay, thank you. I have come up with a slight problem. I think the fact that this came so late and there were a lot of issues with it, that I don't have enough votes to pass this bill right now. And that is not something I was ready to go on this bill, but I like to listen to people and see if they are interested in it or not. To this point, there were some concerns about things, and unless that's changed, I don't see that. I don't see the people that are raising their hands or whatever. I cannot move the bill at this time. I am committed to this is the right thing to do in this particular bill. I expect that I will have a bill. If I'm not a part of it, somebody else will be, to make sure that we do this next session. It came at the committee late. I want to thank the people sitting in the back who did all the work to get to this place, to a bill where I think it really can work. I think that parts of it made people concerned because they weren't sure what it was doing. I read the bill over again, felt very comfortable with the amendments, that it wasn't trying to impose new restrictions. It was just putting all of the current ones into the same place and having that conversation, which I think is a good thing. And I hope that I will be asked to be a sponsor of the bill as we go through in the short session, because I think it's the right thing. And I think the work that was done was exceptional. And I appreciate Morgan coming and talking to me about it afterwards, so I got the answers that I could answer. But I
could we stand at ease for one quick second?
Yes, we can stand at ease.
Just for a second. Can I check?
We'll stand at ease for just a moment. Committee on Education. So, had a nice conversation. Didn't have any rush to change anything from anybody. So we are going to we're complete. Is there anything else that people have that they would like to discuss or have a conversation about? Seeing none, we're going to close the Committee on Education today. What is it today? 18th of April. Thank you very much. 18th of April. Thank you very much. What is it today?